RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Thursday morning, we have our Money Talks feature, and Simon Angelo from Wealth Morning is back with us to talk through a few things. Simon, good to have you back. Good to see you.
Very good to see you too, Paul, and I'm so pleased you are back from the abyss.
Yeah.
It's been rather biased and boring without you.
Did you have faith that we'd be back? This is a question I ask some people.
Yeah, I've met Claire, and I did have faith that there was a determination there and an appetite among your listeners to bring you back.
And they did.
And you're back at not only back, you're back stronger.
It's like we've dropped a new engine in, you know, and added a few extra cylinders, you know.
Sure have, not to mention the supercharger.
And the rocket. And everything else you want to mention. Anyway, good to have you back. There's some interesting issues to go through. So we've been running a series called Our Digital Future, and we've been looking at CBDCs.
Yep.
And so far it's been, well, someone described it yesterday morning in an email as, this is scary. This is scary. And it potentially is. So where do you want to start on CBDCs? Because I know from Wealth Morning you have a headline, and that is CBDCs is evil money coming, written by you. So take it from there, Simon.
Yeah, well, I've had a chat to Alistair Harding for his Our Digital Future show, and there will be more in-depth discussion on this with me next Wednesday.
Oh, cool.
But I want to sort of throw in a few things that perhaps we didn't cover so much and give a different angle to the listeners today. I mean, I initially liked the idea of a digital currency because there's a lack of financial options in New Zealand. I thought this has to be good. But, you know, as your hand gets closer to the flame, you realize, well, there's some dangers here. And you almost have to flowchart where this could go, because there's a whole lot of things people don't realize as to the potential to add more control.
Yeah.
Now, if you start with cash, there's a degree of anonymity, privacy, and cash is final. And a lot of people don't realize just how important that is in daily life until you need it. So a friend of mine, he's been on a diet. His wife put him on a diet. And he walks the dog at night, and he ends up really, really hungry.
Oh.
He goes and buys some fast food. And, of course, he needs to use cash, so that doesn't appear on the FPOS or the credit card. It's what
right.
You call hot dogging. That's what you call hot dogging.
Okay.
And, I mean, that's just an example. And there are many examples when you need a degree of privacy. Now, the next level, of course, is you have a bank account, which is separate from the government. It's separate from the state that taxes you and makes the rules of the game and issues you money. So that's another degree of separation. What a central bank digital currency is going to do, Paul, is the provider of money is essentially going to be the bank, the one-stop shop.
Right.
And that's something that's never really happened before throughout history.
Okay. So I know here in New Zealand, there's been a kind of name change. Reserve Bank is now referring to CBDCs as digital cash, to kind of get that image in your mind that it's still the same, like the same as cash.
Well, it is a digital version of the New Zealand dollar, but my concern is really just what it's going to do to the financial system. And, I mean, you can be as euphemistic as you like. You can call an electric fence a safety barrier.
Yeah.
It's still electrified, and there are still dangers. Now, I mean, I've seen one report which is suggesting 10% of bank deposits could be shed to move to a CBDC. And then the question comes about, well, if you're putting your money, Paul, in a central bank digital account, won't you want the interest rate of the day?
Yeah, I think you mentioned that as maybe a handbrake on this whole thing in an earlier chat, that if banks can't charge interest, well, then what is their business?
Well, my worry is the CBDC is going to pay interest. And to pay interest, it's also going to have a lending facility. Right. And then it'll look like a bank and it'll smell like a bank. It'll essentially be a bank. And you've lost this disintermediation and separation in the financial system. And that's why the governor of the Bank of Denmark, in fact, has ruled it out. He simply said, well, no, it affects demarcation in the financial system and the separation of the powers of a government bank.
There's not much talk about that outside us at the moment, I've noticed. Have you?
Well, I think a pushback is beginning to mount. And if you look in the States, I mean, there was a report out the other day, why is Trump rising in the polls with younger people? And it's not because he's 4 years younger than Biden. I think it's because he's supportive of crypto, decentralized digital currencies. He's said that a number of times. And he's also denounced the risks and dangers of a CBDC. And I think that is now a concern that is coming on people's radar. A few states in the US have already banned it. And you've just got to ask the question, why are central banks going here? Why is there this mission creep? Because really their sole objective is stable monetary policy, keeping inflation between 0 to 3% here in New Zealand. That's their relevance.
Yeah, I haven't heard any local politicians like Trump talking about these things. So you think at some point they're going to have to address this?
Well, I do notice now some of the Democrats who were against crypto and perhaps for CBDCs are starting to pull their craniums out of their rectums and change their tune rather quickly.
Did anyone get that on video?
Well, I think you're going to see more people flipping on this.
Yeah.
Because they realize it's politics and younger people especially don't like it. Because you just, I mean, with a major change in the financial system like this, you just don't know where it could go, Paul. I mean, what about the use of AI? What if they apply AI to your central bank digital currency? I mean, Uber can already predict where you want to take your next ride from. What if that CBDC starts to predict your behavior? And if you get a rather authoritarian government decides that you could be a dangerous person, what if they find out you've been listening to RCR and paying your members club with your CBDC?
Suddenly nothing works. Oh, that will be why Uber Eats keeps suggesting meals that I go, oh, yeah, that's looking good. It's the AI.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, must be. All right, so it's interesting to hear that you're, how would you describe your thinking, more reserved or more suspicious or what? I'm just trying to gauge where you're at.
I'd just like them to cease and desist, if I'm perfectly honest, and stop spending my taxpayer money on it and concentrate on price stability and supervision of banks. I mean, I will admit a slight bias in that I buy banking stocks for our wholesale clients around the world. So I do believe strong banks are essential to the system. But look, if you go back to the very invention of banking, the Republic of Venice 700 years ago, you know, the government there was wanting to force merchants to make loans to it so it could wage war. And they had to set up a separate organization to really manage those loans and the payment of interest. And that was called the Chamber of Loans, the kind of very first banking operation. And it worked because it was separate from the government.
Right.
Then, of course, people started to trust it with deposits. You had the Medici family and the double entry book system. And really this whole industry developed from that. And it worked because it was separate from the state.
Yeah, I get that. Do you think technocrats, let's define them as technocrats, they run away with ideas, get too enthusiastic, and that's dangerous?
You're absolutely right. In fact, I looked at something called Purnell's Ironclad Law of Bureaucracy. And what that says is that people in a bureaucracy, those people who are wanting to build and empower the bureaucracy, they tend to prevail over those who are trying to achieve the goals. So you end up that bureaucracies become more and more controlling and more into themselves rather than actually achieving something of use.
Yeah. Okay. Anything more to say about this? We'll be looking or listening out with interest to your chat with Alistair Harding. So that's next week, right? Next Wednesday at RCR.
Yeah. Well, it's an emerging field. And I think the risk is, you don't know what the risks are until it is implemented.
Yeah. All right. Another link you've sent me here, Quantum Wealth Report, Chinese gold, an urgent trend. I've heard that they're buying up gold like crazy, got thousands of tons of it. Is that true?
Well, there has been quite a bit of buying by the Chinese central bank, and that may have contributed to the 16% rise in the gold price over the past 6 months. And of course, when you've got a situation like in China, where you've got deflationary pressures, their inflation is currently only running at 0.5%, you do want to do things to try and build confidence in your currency and shore that up. And one thing you can do is to buy gold. But I think the sort of numbers and level of demand we're seeing goes beyond the government. I actually think it's individual investors in China where a lot of demand is coming from. And see, they've had a stock market that essentially has crumbled away over the past couple of years. Their property market is in trouble. A friend of mine who's just visited China said the problem in China is when you buy an apartment, you need to get your mortgage up front, even though it's not finished. So people are very, very nervous to buy property. I mean, last year there were bank failures in rural China. There was a run on a bank. And I recall seeing on Fox News 1,000 protesters outside a bank branch protesting.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Access their money for several days. One claimed that they were outnumbered by the police 3-1, who then arrested and beat some of them. So you know, if you're somebody with money in China, perhaps looking to decide where you're going to put it, gold is looking like a very, very good option.
I heard someone say the other day, I think Judge Napolitano, who's quite big on YouTube now, former Fox News presenter, but they kicked him out. And he admits that he's, you know, a paid endorser of the particular gold company. But he pointed out, and it got me thinking, that his gold had gone up 23%, while your cash in the bank had gone down 16% because of inflation. That got my attention, I got to say.
Yes, well, gold has always been a hedge against inflation, really, since biblical times. I mean, the problem with it is when you're holding that gold, you're not getting any yield. You're not getting income from it. So you're purely reliant on really someone digging up the gold, you burying it again in a vault and waiting for someone to pay more than you've paid per ounce at some point in the future. So it's not a terribly productive asset. So what I would say to Judge Napolitano, well, yeah, your gold is up 20% or so, but so too is the S&P 500 over the same period of time. And you could have had that growth through stocks. Well, yes, with some more risks, but you could have also had some yield, some income through dividends along the way. So that is one problem with gold. It hasn't always gone up, Paul. I mean, if you look back to COVID, gold did in fact dip. And I think what people were saying there is, in an emergency situation, say, for instance, your city is about to be bombed, a pilot may not take your gold ingots to fly you offshore, but he may take your Bitcoin.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. If you could shave bits off, though, the block, you could do something with it, couldn't you? You could turn up with a little palm full and pay your bills with that. I can't see that ever happening.
Well, yeah, I mean, at $2,300 an ounce, you don't have to carry too much of it at today's price. But really, as I say, I think that problem is just not being able to get yield from it. And when I worked in offshore finance, I did have a friend who was establishing a business where people could essentially borrow against their gold. So you would give your gold to his company, they would vault it for you securely, and they would then lend you money with your gold as collateral. And you were still having to pay 6-8%. on that money. And then, of course, that was a hurdle to you having to find another investment where you could make more than 6 to 8%.
Climb up the ladder.
Yeah, fantastic hedge against inflation, but you do give up a lot of optionality and yield as well.
I guess you can hide it away, though, can't you? Because I can imagine in China, if they want gold and you've got it, whether you own it or not, they'll take it probably at some point.
Yes, well, there is a privacy aspect to it. There's also a final aspect to it that if your gold is lost or stolen, that may be it.
Yeah. You'd want a metal detector and scales.
You want to know where it is.
Sales would go through the roof. Anything more to say about gold? Interesting, though, in that link, I didn't realize this. China has experienced no less than 1,800 famines. That's incredible.
Yes, and I think that has an ongoing impact on the mentality of people. Very important to make sure you know where your meals are coming from and you are investing in the future. Because when you've seen crises, investing in the future becomes very, very important. And I think many people there are very, very skilled investors and used to navigating difficult times.
Yeah. We're probably not as savvy for that, I would imagine, here, but we haven't had to be, so there's no wonder.
Well, our health system has pushed us to be savvy around property, and then they upended all of that, and we're having to reinvent ourselves in the investment world, perhaps.
Yeah. All right. This is interesting. We just talked about Uber. This kind of looks Uber-ish. Electric aerial ride sharing. I'm looking at a video here. It looks like a proper aircraft, obviously electric power, and it looks like a variable wing or something so it can lift off vertically. And this is, what, the future of ride sharing, Simon? It's probably no-brainer that it was going to happen.
Yeah, well, just to let your listeners know, we've been investing in a company called Joby Aviation, just a disclaimer here, and this is certainly not any financial advice around that company. But we're looking for, well, how can transport change and be disrupted? And Toyota was one of the early investors in this company. They put $400 million into Joby Aviation.
Wow.
And one of the reasons for that, perhaps it's a little sentimental, is that the founder of Toyota had a dream to have flying cars.
Okay.
Well, you don't have to worry about annoying things like roads.
Yeah, they can be annoying. There have been plenty of attempts at those. over the time. Some of them looked a bit Heath Robinson, to use that term, but okay. You know, clipping wings on to your conventional car sort of thing on the side of the road and hoping that everything works.
There is a chance that urban air mobility could be a very, very powerful industry and really another breakthrough in transportation. In fact, last year when Donald Trump was talking about his vision for freedom cities, he also talked about his vision for flying cars,
okay.
and getting ahead of China, for instance, on this. And in particular, he was talking about electric vertical takeoff and landing craft. Now, the beauty of these is they only need the size of the aircraft to take off or land. So when I first started investing in this company, I met with a friend of mine who's been an aviation engineer for 50 years, and we were sitting at Corelli's Cafe on the high street of Devonport, and I said, well, where could this craft land? And he said, well, if authorities would allow, you've probably got the 11-meter wingspan here. It's only 6 meters long. It could potentially touch down right in front of us and drop you off to have your coffee.
Gosh. Okay. But would that be acceptable to – I know that can be done, but you've got to – people have got to, like, not be afraid that it might fall on them in a big gust of wind or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, at the moment, the business is working with what they call vertiports. So this is either in a car park building, on the top of a car park, at an airport, just various ports where they can land and charge. So the craft have typically got a range of about 240 kilometres.
Right.
Uber was another investor in the business, $125 million. and they have an agreement with Uber that when they're ready, it will be part of the Uber rideshare network. So next time, Paul, when you want to go to the airport and come up to Auckland, you'll jump on Uber. For the price of a premium Uber, you'll get an air mobility rideshare. There might be you and a couple of others. I don't know if you've got landing room in your backyard. Have you got 11 or 12 metres?
Maybe on the roof.
On the roof, perfect, even better. And that would whisk you to the airport 320 kilometres an hour. You'd be there in no time, and it would just be fantastic. Now, you raised a very good question. What about regulation? Well, this business has already met 3 of 5 of the certification requirements of the US FAA. So they are looking to commercialize and be ready to fly 2025, 2026. They already have an agreement in Dubai to run the service there, and they've done a trial flight, I believe, in New York City. So this is something to watch.
Yeah, they used to have helicopter flights between JFK and the Pan Am building in New York. I missed that. It had finished a few years before I turned up, but that was quite a regular thing. And I think British Airways used to operate a Heathrow into London flight too, a helicopter.
Yes, yeah, and it's useful to compare this with a helicopter flight because, of course, helicopters need, 40 metres to land?
Yeah.
They're extremely noisy, disruptive, quite expensive. Really, this turns that whole thing on its head.
I remember there was video ages ago when Muldoon was the Prime Minister and he visited Indonesia and he flew into a village to kind of say hi and we're from New Zealand and you know, we're friends. And they came in one of those Iroquois helicopters over the village and the downwash was so much that it blew about 10 houses away. And they weren't very happy.
Right, yeah, no, that's not a good way to arrive.
I take it these aren't self-flying machines. You have a pilot, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, one way to get around passenger resistance with new technology like this is you do have a pilot and then up to 4 passengers. And that would allow you to go into the Uber network. It's just a case of training enough pilots. But to add further to that, they did recently buy X-Wing's automation division. Now, X-Wing flies planes autonomously.
Right.
With no crew. I believe they've done about 250 flights and they have some interesting software called Superpilot, allows you to fly and land without a pilot. But I do notice the company's been quick to say, well, we're only autonomous flying is probably much further ahead as it is with autonomous cars. And our main focus is actually just having piloted rideshare for now over the next year or two.
That would be something airlines would be interested in getting into as well. Like I'm thinking, okay, there's Uber, obviously, but that's not much of an extension for an already established airline operation to bring in that component of it as well. Just thinking.
Yes, yes. Although I suppose there's a huge difference between flying a Dreamliner from Auckland to New York as opposed to just having a small electric vertical takeoff and landing craft a couple of 100 kilometres, you know, between Auckland and Hamilton perhaps or out to the airport. So, but the world's changing quickly. And as investors, we want to be abreast of these changes, whether they're AI or freedom cities or even flying cars.
So you think there's something, obviously you do, something in this and it's going to become a reality and it will be the new way, the new freedom way of traveling.
Right? Well, I'm an optimist, but I do acknowledge this is very speculative. I mean, there's still a few hurdles to get through with the FAA and there's obviously people's reluctance to jump into a small flying craft, which is battery powered.
Yeah. They do put parachutes on planes now. So if anything goes wrong, you pull the chute and you're probably going to survive.
Well, yes, I'm sure there'll be parachutes perhaps on the Joby aircraft. But I mean, when you're making an investment in such speculative things, you're also looking for an investment parachute. And one thing I do like about this business is they are sitting on about $1 billion of capital and current assets. So yeah, they do have a good amount of money to continue to invest, but it is a race against time. Will they meet the requirements and be able to commercialize before they run out of money?
Yeah, well, that tells you everything you need to know. The investment, what, by Toyota, by Uber, that's serious money, isn't it? Serious money.
Yes. Well, they're also working with Toyota, who are very, very good manufacturers. They have a factory in Dayton, Ohio, where they're looking to scale up manufacture of the units. So Toyota's helping with that. Right. So there are a few other operators around, but I think those two partnerships make Joby quite attractive, in my opinion.
I had to go and film some skydivers once in America over the over Florida, and the guy said, "Here, put this parachute on." And I said, "I've never worn a parachute before. I don't know how it works." He says, "Well, we've got to put it on you for legal reasons." I said, "Well, what do I do?" He said, "Pull that cord and hope like hell." That was the briefing. Over the Everglades it was.
But over the Everglades, okay. But you stayed in the airplane to do your filming.
Yeah. But I was on the edge of the door looking down 13,000 feet, and we had to have everyone in the plane had to have a parachute because of the rules that they were operating under. But they didn't seem to mind if you'd never had one or used one before. That was the briefing. Pull that cord and hope like hell.
And that becomes very meaningful when you're up high in an aircraft and it's open to the elements.
Oh, yeah, and you're looking down and it's 13,000 feet down under your feet. It's freaky, man, I tell you.
Yeah, well, I recall being up in small helicopters laying oil cables and laying pipes and cables for the oil industry in Taranaki. And, you know, you essentially have guys hanging off those choppers and it's open air and you're through the valleys and it suddenly gives you an appreciation for height.
I just thought, don't look down. Look through the viewfinder. Actually, when you look through a viewfinder and look down, it's not so bad. It's when you look with your own eyes. Anyway, you just reminded me, you triggered me on that one. I've got another quick question for you. Any thoughts or comments on Saudi Arabia not renewing the petrodollar arrangement?
Well, we've been going to and fro on this for a while, as the US dollar in decline. In fact, it's actually strengthening. And with them getting inflation under control, it's proving to be one of the more reliable currencies out there, along with the euro. And now, of course, the US is pretty well self-sufficient for oil due to fracking. So I wouldn't be too worried about the old petrodollar anymore. It's more a relic of the 70s and 80s when the US didn't have that self-sufficiency.
Also, not such a big deal because people I hear talking when I range around the news are saying, well, once that's gone, the hegemony of the US is gone.
Well, those people are assuming that the Middle East has oil leverage over the US, and it has done before, but now with the advent of fracking and US self-sufficiency in oil, and actually also moving away from oil as it moves into more renewables, I think a lot of that leverage is gone. I mean, I was at an Infratil presentation the other day, and we looked at a Long Road Energy solar installation in the Arizona desert. And he laid out the size of that installation across the North Shore. It took up the whole of the North Shore of Auckland and much of the downtown.
Wow.
And that generated, I think from memory, about 10% of New Zealand's total electricity production. And it's quite clever technology. Solar. It can flip in the case of thunderstorms. The panels can flip. They can be easily and cost-effectively replaced, and they're pretty well all manufactured in the US, those solar panels. So right. Some of that old petrodollar leverage, I think, is really something in the past.
Just reminded me, I was over in Mojave, California in January just gone, and they've got this massive wind farm.
Oh, yeah.
I have never seen such a big, huge setup. It's as far as the eye can see.
Right.
It's just massive, and there's just this blades turning and turning. I never found out how much electricity it generated, but it just made me realize the scale on which you can do things.
Yes, and I mean, energy is just so fundamental to our economy. And certainly in stock markets, those are businesses that we like to invest in, very innovative, high-margin companies that can produce cheap and reliable energy.
All right. If people want to get in touch, Simon, what's the best way?
Our website with our news is wealthmorning.com. And if they have comments they want to send to me directly, the email is cs@wealthmorning.com.
How long do you think it'll be before we're dropping in one of these electric Ubers? How long? 4 or 5 years?
You want to put some money on it?
No.
Well, I think that's going to be the big metropolitan places which are very congested, like New York and Dubai, where they first will come.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be wonderful to have it in Auckland, because I don't know about the road out of your suburb, but the one out of mine is perpetually blocked except for the green cycle lanes.
You might as well drive on them. but if I can get somewhere, if I can get, because I'm in Wellington, if I get to Paraparaumu, let's say in 15 minutes or less, I'd probably take it, actually.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and be a very pleasant trip up there in the sky, moving quickly and silently to where you want to go. What a way to travel.
What about that nor'wester, though, gusting 50 knots? How do you think they'll handle those?
Well, they are quite a small craft. I wouldn't want to see you flipped over up there.
No, I wouldn't want to see that either.
But, yeah. I mean, it does give me security that there is a wingspan rather than just the blades of a chopper.
Yeah.
So, I think those wings give you some ability to handle turbulence.
Yeah, and glide to the ground rather than just fall in a burning heap.
Yes, of course, absolutely, yes.
Good to catch up again, Simon Angelo from Wealth Morning and our Money Talks, and listen out for Simon with Alistair Harding next Wednesday, right, Simon, talking about our digital future CBDCs. That should be
good. Yeah, that's right. Very serious issue, and so glad that you are covering it.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.